Hello again, sports fans. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. The Kansas City Royals took the World Series. The NFL is pulling hard for a London franchise. Jason Pierre-Paul is getting back on the gridiron after a terrible fireworks accident earlier this year. College football rankings could be a bit controversial. Basketball season underway. We have lots to talk about, lots to distract us from the tragedy of the Mets' loss in the World Series, although that may come up. Joining us now is Times Union sports editor Pete Iorizzo and Daily Gazette executive sports editor Mark McGuire. Mark and Pete, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, and thanks for introducing me first.
Yeah, well, you see,
they outrank him.
He's the executive sports editor, Mark McGuire. 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551 is our number. If you want to talk with these executive and non-executive sports editors, you can also post your comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website. It's wamc.org/VoxPop. You can comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on Facebook, facebook.com/WAMC Radio, or you can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop if you wish. But the number, once again, is 800-348-2551. You can also email us if you want, voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org is the email address. All right, well, let's get right to it. What a wonderful, wonderful Mets season. What a great August and September and October until the end. And I guess we should all be thankful, right?
It was a blessing. I mean, we did not see this coming. In June, we were making fun of the Mets. In July, we were making fun of the Mets. And
you were. I wasn't.
Yes, you were.
I was very serious about it.
We were very seriously despondent, but it was... It was something that really caught lightning in the bottle. We can, you know, trace it back to the night... Wilmer Flores cried in a few days before when the Mets started making some acquisitions with Kelly Johnson and Juan Uribe and bringing up Michael Conforto, and it kind of just steamrolled from there.
And then 2 months later, we all cried as we watched Lucas Duda's throw sail about 10 feet left of home plate.
And he had him by 15 feet. All he had to do was get it there.
Unfortunately, missed him by 15 feet, too.
Yeah, well.
There's a lot of woulda, coulda, shouldas in that series, but you just get a feeling for all those individual moments where the Mets just gacked away innings and gacked away games. The Royals were going to win that series. They were just a team that took advantage of moments like that. And for all the chances the Mets had, looking back in hindsight, you just knew the Royals were going to take advantage, and they were going to win that series regardless.
Go ahead, Pete.
I was going to say that. I mean, the bottom line is when you can't hold a lead, can't play defense, and can't get a timely hit, your odds of winning the series are not very good.
Yeah, and the injuries, and I really think that Cespedes was not the same after he was hit in the hand. I think the Phillies did it to us again. It was September 30th. He got hit in the thumb or the fingers, and he was never the same after that. And Granderson went under the knife Tuesday, which I just found out. He had ligament damage, and he hit three home runs in the World Series. So, hey, it is what it is. The one thing you can say is the Mets pitching's pretty good.
It was pretty good, but there are still some holes. I mean, one of the most stunning stats from this World Series is the Royals scored 27 runs in the five games. 15 of those runs came in the eighth inning or later.
Mm. Felt like all of them came in the eighth inning or later watching the series.
It was you know, certainly not. So the issue wasn't starting pitching with the Mets, you know, outside of game two with DeGrom. And even that was not an epic meltdown by any stretch of the imagination. It was certainly getting to familiar. And then there's a question about, because there was a lack of trust in the bridge to Familia and using him into the eighth inning over the later course of the season into the postseason, did that have an impact on him in the World Series? Because he was lights out through the postseason up until the World Series.
I think he was pretty good until that one home run in game one.
He was perfect.
Yeah, and I feel a little – I mean, he's going to go down as the only guy who's ever blown three games in a World Series. But, I mean, frankly, it was really Clippard who set the second blown save into motion by walking the first two batters. And then, hey, you know, in game five, what are you going to do? He gets – I think he ended up getting six outs altogether. But, you know, they end up scoring the go-ahead – the tying run. And, you know, all he did was get two guys out.
You know, it's always a case of hindsight being 20/20, but you saw Matt Harvey in the eighth telling Terry Collins, no, you're not taking me out, I'm going in. Terry Collins gave in to an ace pitcher, and it didn't work out all that well.
Yeah, I think anybody who is in that building, though, I mean, how could you take Matt Harvey out?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the whole crowd is chanting. It just felt like it was about to be one of those great moments, really, in New York sports history. I mean, if Harvey goes out there and throws a 1-2-3 ninth inning, I mean, no matter what happens the rest of the series, we would have been talking about that game forever.
Well, I was nervous when he came out of the dugout and ran at top speed. I said, uh-oh, he's too amped for this. And his first three pitches were high and too hard and... You know, the rest is history.
Yeah, the only quibble you could have with Collinson is not taking him out after the walk in the ninth. He had to go out in the ninth inning. That I don't think anybody could reasonably question that at this point. Should he have taken him out after walking him? Probably yes. That said, as Pete noted, it set itself up for one of the epic moments in New York history in terms of, you know, Matt Harvey. America saw him saying no way to his manager.
Yeah.
And given the history of Matt Harvey this season with the innings cap, with the missed workout before the start of the postseason, in many ways, even though the Mets lost, Matt Harvey won back New York that night.
I don't think he lost New York, except for some like you and a couple others who said trade him right away. I think he didn't lose me. He didn't lose me.
He lost a lot of people.
Why? Because you're coming back from Tommy. By the way, the number to call here if you want to join in, and it's not just about the Mets today, it's sports with Pete Iorizzo of the Times Union and Mark McGuire of the Daily Gazette. Anything you want to talk about today, it's 800-348-2551. Listen, you're coming back from 17-month layoff after Tommy John surgery. You have a right to be a little concerned about your future. And he wanted the pitch, and he's a comeback player of the year. He pitched, and he pitched great all year.
Yeah, but remember at the time, this Scott Boras client, the initial report that came out was he's going to shut it down at 180 innings in the middle of a pennant race. That was the initial report, and he was equivocal at first about how it came out, and Met fans went crazy.
Well, he didn't know how to handle this.
Yeah, and I think to Mark's point, arguing that there are still some Mets fans who are bothered by that, the talk radio reaction in the past couple of days, there's a lot of Mets fans who said, you know what, he was selfish for wanting to go back out there and pitch the ninth.
Okay,
inning.
Now that is hindsight. That is ridiculous.
I'm not saying I agree with that sentiment, but it's out there, and I think that does suggest that Harvey lost some people along the way this season.
Yeah, and that I disagree with. To be honest with you, as a Met fan, I do not necessarily have my heart into Matt Harvey because I just picture him in Yankee pinstripes in 3 years. And you can book that.
No way.
Absolutely.
$5.
You're on.
Okay.
That said, I want a pitcher who wants to be on the mound. I want a pitcher arguing with the manager saying, I want to go back for one more inning. I want that bulldog mentality. It's the onus is on the manager to say, no, I'm taking the ball away from you. So there's no way you can fault Matt Harvey for wanting to be on the mound in the ninth inning.
And had Collins taken him out, I think even if Familia comes in and throws a 1-2-3 ninth inning, you'd still hear people saying, oh, why did he take, you know, how could he have taken Harvey out there in the ninth inning? He got lucky that Familia got out of that.
It's a no-win for Terry Collins, but it would have been no problem had the Mets' bats gotten going and two runs. You know, you're a starting pitcher, you give up two runs. That's a good quality start. The Mets just couldn't get the bats going. Maybe it was injury. I still think Cespedes' injury was terrible. And then the shoulder, which Lord knows how that shoulder was injured in the NLCS. But, I mean, come on, man. If you're not going to score five runs, you're not likely to win a World Series game.
And there were still three innings to be played there. The game wasn't over until the 12th inning. The Mets had three chances to score one run and couldn't do it. In fact, I don't think they had a base runner.
All knew it was over by the time that save was blown.
Yeah, that was...
We were Mets fans.
It was pretty much over. You could tell the crowd was not even getting truly amped up after that. It was just waiting for the final shoe to drop. And It dropped again and again and again and again.
It took me about 36 hours to get over it, and now I'm looking forward to next year. How long did it take you guys as Mets fans?
To be honest, not that long.
No?
I kind of, going into this series, and I wasn't going to be public about it, and maybe not even honest with myself, but it was just a terrible matchup for the Mets. It just was from the start. I mean, this is a team that just pecked at you again and again and again. If the Mets had matched up against with the Blue Jays, and the free swinging nature of that team, I think they would have won that series. This was a very difficult team to match up with because they're so good at hitting fastballs, as you saw. You saw them foul off pitch again and again and again and again and get broken back bat bloops and, you know, these little flares and just found a way. And so when they lost the series, I was like, okay, we're a year ahead of schedule. Let's see what, you know, next year brings with this pitching staff and who they can bring aboard to replace the artist formerly known as Daniel Murphy.
He's a goner, right?
I would think so. I mean, he already makes $8 million a year as it is. I would think he's going to get a raise, and I'm not sure how much the Mets are going to play a guy who doesn't really have a position.
No, he's not a very good. I think there were several balls hit that a good second baseman gets in the last few games of that series. Even Flores gets those balls.
It was really interesting through the postseason, especially the Cup Series, as Murphy is becoming an adjective and a verb, and you know these Murphy and exploits, and then he sort of reverts to form, and you know we're saying, yes, America, this is our Daniel Murphy, and this is the guy we kind of know. He's booting balls and you know making miscues on the base pass. That's the player you get, and that's the player he is. And certainly there could be an upgrade to have he had with Dilson Herrera or some other combination of Flores and Tejada.
I actually like Flores on second base.
Me too.
He was okay at shortstop, actually, through the World Series. He was the one guy in the infield who didn't hurt them in the World Series, oddly enough. But I wouldn't mind seeing him on second base next year.
Well, I have some bad news. I ran the numbers, and the mean number of years between Mets World Series appearances, 11.5, going back to 1969. So that means we'll round it up to 12. That means 2027 we can have another Mets edition of this show.
And we'll be here.
You think?
Well, then that means also, but the good news is they'll be due to win.
Maybe I'll have executive in my title by then.
Hopefully I'll have retired in mine.
So yeah, okay, fair enough.
Emeritus would be good.
Well, we're really lighting up the phones here. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. It's Sports Today. Pete Iorizzo, who is the executive. No, not yet he's not. He's the sports editor of the Times Union. And then we have the Daily Gazette executive sports editor, Mark McGuire. I'm Ray Graff. Your calls are welcome. Or not. We're going to talk sports anyway. And let's take a break here, Zach.
Support comes from Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York. Sales and service of Audi, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Saab, Volkswagen, and Porsche. QFCC.com. H. Houst & Son True Value Hardware and Rentals, Woodstock. Since 1932, your local and independent store featuring products and advice for a variety of projects. Behind every project is a true value. HHoust.com. Grapes and Grains Wine and Spirits, East Greenbush, New York. Offering wine and craft spirits from around the globe and from local artisans. Hand-picked selection of wines, single malts, and small batch bourbons. GrapesandGrainsWine.com. And Windy Hollow Veterinary Clinic, Montague, Massachusetts. Conventional and integrative veterinary medicine, including acupuncture and chiropractic therapy, comprehensive pet care and health services since 1998. WindyHollowVet.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Sports Today with Pete Iorizzo of the TU and Daily Gazette executive sports editor Mark McGuire. And you at home, you can also email us, voxpop@wamc.org. And we have an email here. It says, hi, can you discuss how free agency will impact the composition of so many teams next year? Murphy probably gone. Greinke has decided to go the free agent route, etc. So many teams will not have the same personnel next year. I'd hoped the Mets would have won, but they were simply outplayed this year, and I certainly agree with that last statement.
Yeah,
the better team won, bottom line.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it was closer than a 4-1 series would indicate. I mean, the Mets had a lead in three of the four losses in the eighth inning or later.
The 14-inning game one was epic.
You know, the bottom line is you lose a series 4-1. How could you argue otherwise?
Yeah.
And that was certainly the better season. To go to the question, there's going to be there's a lot of pitching out there.
Yeah.
Greinke, Jordan Zimmermann.
Price.
Price, Cueto. Look for the Cubs are definitely looking for a starter behind Arrieta.
And you think you got to figure Price is the one, given their manager now, right?
You would think Price is looking for a home. Like, you got to keep in mind that Price has a very spotty postseason record, but then again, so did Randy Johnson.
He didn't pitch that bad. I don't think he was that terrible in the postseason for Toronto.
Yeah, but I'm just looking over his career record. Cueto is certainly going to demand attention. Jordan Zimmerman's going to demand attention. Zach Greinke, now he hits the market whether the Dodgers are going to go after him hard.
Yep.
He said he liked Los Angeles. He may stay at home as well. It's clear that Yankees could be in the mix. They need to beef up their rotation. They also have some bullpen issues they have to address. So, the one team that doesn't need starters is the Mets.
Right.
I was going to say, if you're a Mets fan, sit back and enjoy this, because there's going to be a lot of crazy money thrown at some of these guys.
Not yet, but soon.
Soon.
And there is some talk they may try an extension on DeGrom early, which wouldn't be a bad idea. You got Zach Wheeler, who's coming back from Tommy John somewhere around the All-Star break. So the Mets would appear to be loaded on the pitching front. Whether they have the product, I mean, let's face it, the acquisition of Cespedes made August happen. Whether that ever happens again for any player is questionable, given the impact he had. But the Mets certainly will perhaps not have that much flash next year.
Yeah, that was lightning in the bottle. I mean, and you really got to go back that and just remember how serendipitous that was. I mean, that happened because Carlos Gomez's medical report, had a red flag.
Yeah.
And the fact that Cespedes fell into the lap and he just got incredibly, ridiculously hot at the right moment and stayed hot for the better part of 2 months.
I go counterintuitive and counter public sort of sentiment here and think the Mets will make a hard run at him. They know his injuries better than anybody over the past month.
Maybe the money won't be for Cespedes as crazy as everybody thinks either. He, was sort of exposed in the postseason. You sort of got the idea of maybe this is why this guy has played for four different teams in 4 years. And if the Mets think they can get him at fair market value.
Yeah, and another thing to keep in mind, the Mets will probably put a tender in for Murphy as well, just to recoup a pick.
Yeah.
He will go elsewhere. There are other bats that are out there too. Hayward from St. Louis is out there. Davis from the Orioles. The Mets won't be in the market for that first baseman, obviously. There are some bats out there. The Mets will be looking for a big bat, preferably a left-handed bat. If they do move away from Cespedes, they do need power. What the Mets need to do is move away from streakiness. I mean, that's obviously been the problem this season.
The guy hit 280 or 290 over the season. It's hardly streaky. Yeah, you had
No, I understand. I understand with Cespedes, but if they move away from Cespedes, but as a team, this was a team of ultimate streaks.
Okay.
I mean, if you saw it over the course of the season and you saw it over the course of the postseason, when they're hot, they're incredibly hot, and when they're cold, they are ice cold.
So that's the thing. I mean, the Mets hit a lot of home runs, but you got Granderson, who usually hits his in bunches, and you got Duda, who hits his in bunches, and obviously Cespedes was hot and cold. It is tough to have a lineup full of guys that are like that.
Well, we'll go to the phones in just a moment. Russ and Waterford, you'll be first. But one thing in Duda's defense, Duda was very hot, and then he got hurt. And it took him a while to come back, and his swing was coming back. So he missed, what, 3 or 4 weeks?
Yeah, and then he went on a cold streak again, and then he got hot again, and then he got cold again.
I think he...
And then toward the end of the postseason into the World Series, he was on another upswing again.
Barring injuries, he's a 280 hitter who hits you 30 home runs, and I think you take that. All right, let's go to the phones, 1-800-348-2551. Russ in Waterford. Russ. Hello, Russ, are you there? Did we lose him? Is he potted up? All right, Russ, if you're not there, Hello, there you are. Yes, you're on.
Yeah. I hate to change the subject on you guys, although I will say this as much as I'm not a baseball fan. When the first batter up hits an inside-the-park home run, I think a lot of people go, uh-oh, this might not be good.
Thanks for bringing that up.
Was that an omen? By the way, that was a four-base error, by the way. That was a Little League home run. That was hometown score.
Oh, boy.
I put that out of my memory. All right, good.
Spoken like a true Mets fan. Okay, I have a couple. I want to know you guys' thoughts on a couple of things involving football. There's two things that make me scream on my TV every Sunday, and one of them is, pass interference calls where the guy, there's no flag, and then the guy gesticulates for 10 minutes or 10 seconds, and a flag comes in. It's like it either is or it isn't. It's like flopping in basketball. I mean, they put an end to that. And the other thing is, they have to do something about forward progress with a running back, because these guys are just getting held up, and other guys are coming in trying to strip the ball and hitting them. And I think you're going to see a whole lot more injuries unless they put in. And I don't know what you guys are sports writers. I don't know if you have any thought on that or not.
You mean blow the whistle quicker?
Yeah, I mean, or no, not so much quicker. It either is or it isn't. You know what I mean. The guy gets up off the turf, and he starts motioning, this guy interfered, and all of a sudden the flag comes in. It isn't a bang-bang type of thing. It's almost a delay until the receiver complains.
All right, what do you think?
Actually, my pet peeve is not so much when the flag comes in late, but when you see a guy catch a pass on the 30-yard line, and then the flag comes in from like three counties away. There's an official standing right there who doesn't throw the flag, but the guy standing right all the way on the other 30-yard line, you know, throws the flag as far as he can. So that annoys me too. But yeah, there is so much, you know, the NFL has cracked down so much on what defensive backs are able to do that you're right. I think every time a receiver does not catch a pass, the first thought is, well, can I get a pass interference call or can I get a holding call? And it leads to what you said. You know, a guy pops up and he's, you know, gesticulating for 5 minutes trying to get the call.
He's essentially just pleading to the ref, hey, throw the flag, and the ref decides whether to or not.
And I think one of the things, the problem that the NFL has, and I think we got to bring it down to its bare essence, is it's getting a little too complicated. I don't know about you. I don't know what a catch is anymore. And this has been it's been a common lament now, and the fact that someone has been watching football as long as I have, as long as Pete has, as long as Ray have, if we can't say honestly what a catch is after watching football as long as we have, that's a problem. That's not a problem on our part. That's a problem on the NFL's part. And some of this instead of what they have is adding rule upon rule and layer upon layer, has actually made it more confusing rather than illuminating. And really, they should maybe strip down some of these rules, strip down the catch rule, strip down the PI rule, and make it actually simpler.
Well, it used to be that if you caught the ball and you were shoved out of bounds, it was still a catch, and now it's not. It's, you know,
yeah.
You're right. It's so convoluted now. But I don't know. Like I said, and then the other thing with the forward progress, if you watch enough football, you'll see the linebacker grabs the guy around the waist, and two or three guys are pawing at the ball, and then somebody else comes in and finishes them off. And there's so many injuries nowadays, somebody's going to get really hurt.
That's tough to believe. If he's still moving forward, that's a tough judgment call. I'm not really sure how you legislate that. It's as long as he's still moving forward, especially sometimes with the help of his own offensive lineman, it's tough to blow the whistle.
Right, and if you're a running back, you don't want them to blow that whistle too quickly.
No, I understand. And Marshawn Lynch gets a lot more extra yards when those linemen start shoving on him. There's no doubt about that.
All right. Well, thanks for the call, Russ. We appreciate it. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. And let's go over to Gary in Alford. Gary.
Hey, going into football, you were talking about, you know, long times between championships.
Yeah.
How about the Buffalo Bills? Are they going to the playoffs this year?
That's a great question.
To the Super Bowl?
Are they disciplined enough?
How about the Bills? No, obviously not. But I think that's the coach.
Well, you're absolutely right about that.
You know, Pete and I are both Jets fans, so we're pretty familiar with Rex. They obviously have a question with quarterback issues, and they definitely have a discipline issue. And there's a question about whether is that defense as good as advertised. That said, they do have a lot of weapons in place. And the AFC East is, outside of, obviously, the Patriots, is muddled. The Buffalo Bills are an intriguing, confusing team right now, and they're not as good as they should be.
Well, let's put the crown, the East crown, away.
Correct.
All right, Patriots are going to take that unless something drastic happens. Is the wild card a possibility for that Buffalo Bills team?
I was just going to say, let's see, no quarterback, overrated defense. I feel like I've seen this somewhere before.
Yeah, he keeps falling into it, doesn't he? It does sound like Jets 2.0, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm not sure I put the – I mean, full disclosure, I'm a Jets fan. I'm not sure I'm ready to put the Bills ahead of the Jets as a potential wild card contender out of the East. I think the Jets defense – this past weekend, notwithstanding,
Who won when they played head-to-head?
They haven't yet.
They haven't yet? There are two games to go?
Yeah, they have the game coming up, and then they have a game late in the season.
Very interesting. Well, the Jets have a big game this weekend, which should be a statement game against a lesser team, maybe, right?
Well, they're playing Jacksonville, yeah. Well, the question is they're going to be playing with Ryan Fitzpatrick, who has torn ligaments in his thumb, his non-throwing hand. He's going to start, which is pretty much an indictment of Geno Smith and how little they think of him at this point.
What about the kid?
Bryce Petty, he's not ready. He's not ready.
I keep hearing that, but Eli Manning, his first season, first half was Kurt Warner, and then they said, you know what, Kurt, we're going to bring our guy in.
Eli Manning did not come from the spread offense that Petty came. Petty's learning how to take snaps under center. He's in kindergarten right now. And there is history of Carson Palmer playing with the same type of injury that Fitzpatrick's going to play with.
And that's on his non-throwing hand.
Non-throwing hand.
All right, let's go to Dave in Northampton, Mass. Dave, you're on.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Just wanted to make a comment on the Mets. I've been watching them since 1962 in my parents' basement in New Haven, Connecticut.
Yeah.
When they were playing at the Polo Grounds. So, obviously, this year was a great year for me, for a Mets fan. But it's kind of strange with the free agency thing. It seems like it's getting harder and harder for a team to actually have an identity. It's more about the players and how much money they can make here and there. I mean, Daniel Murphy following the Mets all year, he wasn't very highly regarded at all in the early part of the season. And, you know, they're kind of, you know, following the Mets in the post and stuff like that. They were groaning about him every time he took the field practically. But, you know, he set a record for home runs. So, I mean, but then on the other hand, obviously he made some fielding errors.
Yes, he did.
But it was only like a month ago I suddenly found out from people, oh, you know, well, he's not going to stay because he's going to, you know, get $8 bazillion from some other team. And I was kind of shocked by that. That's all new to me. I figured, you know, this guy just started to make his name in the Mets, and now all of a sudden he's going on the market for X amount of dollars. I just think it's kind of – I think that the team should cite that up a little bit because, you know, we all grew up playing in high school and stuff like that, and, you know, you played with the same people all year. People rarely transferred, you know, occasionally they would transfer to another high school if their parents moved or something. But these concepts of teams, it's getting harder and harder to focus on who is actually the team. You know, I think baseball in particular should pay attention to that because it gets a little crazy.
There's no walking it back at this point. But I do think
I suppose you're right.
I do think that teams still can have an identity. I just think that identity is just going to be much shorter lived than it was.
I mean,
in
Kansas
years past.
City. They came back and they won it this year, largely the same couple of additions, but it was the same sort of team.
And the Mets, for that matter, too, are a team whose identity is going to be the starting pitching. I think free agency, it also, as you saw with the Mets and the Royals this year, it puts an added onus on developing your own players. You know, these are homegrown guys, you know, by and large. Both teams were supplemented through trades and free agency. But, you know, by and large, it was homegrown guys that have helped rebuild these two organizations. Because the fact of the matter is, you just, through free agency, it's really difficult to acquire a guy who's in the prime of his career. You know, so many of these guys have long-term contracts now that by the time they hit the free agency market, they're on the wrong side of the bell curve, so to speak.
And what you're seeing now also is you're seeing a growing trend to lock down some of the younger superstars early in their contract. So it's somewhat addressing some of the concerns you have. Instead of waiting for them to play out to their 25, 26, 27, 28, they're trying to lock them down when they're 23 to these long-term mega deals, or 24 to these long-term mega deals. You know, the Mike Trouts and the Bryce Harpers of the world. So they never hit that free agent market when they're 28 and 29 and entering, you know, their prime 6-7 years of their career.
Dave, thanks a lot for the call. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. Danny Murphy's been around a long time, though, and he's no spring chicken. And we've all known, those of us who've watched 160 Mets games a year or more or less, know that they've been trying to find a position for the guy for how many years now?
Yeah, his position is designated hitter.
He should be an American leaguer where he could spot at first base, which I think is his best position, to be honest with you. Spot at first, play second if he has to, little third if he has to, but mainly just hit the ball.
Yeah, the Mets have plenty of backup first basemen. Michael Kadire is going to be a backup first baseman next year. eventually, I wonder if Wilmer Flores is going to eventually slide over to first base. So down the road, I would.
They have that kid, the Mets.
Dominic Smith in the minors. That could be a possibility as well if he continues to develop. So it's not really there's not really a need for Daniel Murphy on this team.
No. Let's go to Diane in New Salem. Hi, Diane. You're on.
Hi. I am a Green Bay fan.
Yes.
I want to know what you fellas think happened in Mr. Rogers' neighborhood.
You know, that was such a strange game.
What happened?
That was.
I love Aaron Rodgers.
I think it's about time we look less at Aaron Rodgers, per se, and we start looking at the Broncos' defense.
Which is good.
Epic. Mm-hmm. And if you think about it, this is a Peyton Manning team where Peyton Manning is the one being carried.
Yeah.
And literally carried. I mean, he is an anchor on that team.
He's a little better this last week.
A little means mediocre.
Right.
And what we're seeing is a Broncos defense that is that epic that if they can shut down Aaron Rodgers, they can shut down anybody.
Yeah, I think this was sort of the coming out party for the Denver defense. This is where we started to look at that team as not so much a team whose identity revolves around Peyton Manning, but a team whose identity is going to be really an outstanding defense.
Yeah. You think it just wasn't a fluke?
From a Packers standpoint, this is the phrase in the Mets universe is Panic City. This is not time to enter Panic City. This is not something I would be overly concerned about at this point.
And Aaron Rodgers has been there before. You remember the press conference where he said, relax.
R-E-L-A-X.
And I still think they're gonna win the NFC. I really do.
Who?
Yes.
The Packers, yeah.
Yeah, the bad
you
news.
Do.
The,
I feel so much better.
The bad news is they might face the Broncos.
That's okay. Second time is a charm. Diane, thanks a lot. Let's go to Steve in Glenville. Steve.
Hi. Can you guys hear me?
Sure.
Sure.
Great.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Steve. Steve, my bad, but we're coming up on a break here. Would you mind hanging on the line? We'll get you on the other side.
I'm happy to hang on. Happy to hang on, Ray.
Let's do this, then.
We'll be here. Okay.
Support comes from Carrie Haddad Gallery, Hudson, New York, presenting Color Theory, an exhibit of abstract paintings by Vincent Pamelio, James O'Shea, and Stephen Brophy through November 15th. Open every day, CarrieHaddadGallery.com. Clipcentric, Albany, a local video services division of Clipcentric, producing video advertisements for businesses throughout the capital region for web, mobile, and TV. Albany.clipcentric.com. Maybe Farm Historic Site, an 18th century farm on the banks of the Mohawk River, featuring interactive food exhibit, Instagram photo exhibit, talks, nature trails, and events for children and adults. Accepting reservations for basket weaving workshops, SchenectadyHistorical.org. The Arthur Zankel Music Center at Skidmore College, a cultural resource for the upstate region, providing a teaching, recording, and performance venue with rental options available. Skidmore.edu/ZANKEL. And Capital Wine, corner of State and Lark Streets in the heart of Albany, offering local, domestic, and international wines, spirits, and special orders. Tastings Fridays 6 to 9, CapitalWine.com.
World Series pain starting to ebb. It's feeling better here. We have a group session with Pete Iorizzo of the Times Union and Mark McGuire of the Daily Gazette, and you at home, 1-800-348-2551. Also talking a bit of football, and on the line still to rehash a bit more about the Mets, it's our friend Steve in Glenville. Steve, you're on.
Thanks, Ray. All right, so I got a couple of quick points, and then I thought of a question. The lovely producer asked if I had a question. I said I don't, but I thought of one. So, number one, David Wright coming back this year, I think it's a fantastic story no one's talking about. Even though he didn't do so great, I think it's fantastic. And to that end, I think Matt Harvey coming back after surgery after last year is another great story.
Agreed.
You know, Game 5, before he finished pitching in the eighth inning, I was saying to my son, you got to keep Harvey in. You got to keep him in. He's pitching. He's throwing so well. It's his last game of the season, regardless, no matter what else happens. He's not pitching after tonight. Keep him in. That being said, I'd still stand by that, even though what happened, because I felt like it was as good as anything else we were going to do, even with Famia.
Can I disagree with you?
Absolutely.
Now, I was telling my son that, oh my gosh, he's leaving the ball up now. This is in the middle of the eighth inning. He's got to go. He's getting tired. The ball is staying up, and he's got to go. But, you know, the crowd wanted it, and everybody else wanted it but me.
Ray sees disaster when the Mets are up 14-0. Just ignore him.
I saw disaster in the one win.
The one time he was right, he's going to take credit for it.
All right, fine. That's true. Guilty.
He's waiting for it. Yeah. I like Ray. I think it's a good balance over there at WAMC. And I'm pretty liberal as it goes. Right. But anyhow, so the thing with Collins then, and I guess I just want to say, I see your point, Ray, but I didn't see it that night. I just thought, he's still throwing great. Let's just finish it out. That being said, I'm glad they also signed Collins 2 more years. I think, you know, he's kicking himself, but what are you going to do? And it's one of those things, it seems like it's costly, but Ray made a point earlier. You know, you don't score 3 runs to back up your starting pitcher. That's a problem for a World Series team, for any team.
Sandy Alderson said it the other day.
Yeah, absolutely. So that leads to my question. Well, as I lead into the question quick, I'm very happy, finally, after like 4 days, I'm like, okay, I can now appreciate what the Royals did. And what I liked about them last year, I like about them now, not 5 days ago, about the small ball. It's fantastic baseball. It's the best baseball around. It's how we grew up, most of us.
It's National League baseball.
Yeah, absolutely. So my question is, do you guys think there's any real chance in this day and age for small ball to catch on? And I don't mean just in the majors. I mean like all over the country, in the little leagues and the whole bit.
I may be looking at this too big picture, but I sort of feel like we live in a society now where people really appreciate the dramatic, and I don't know. I think we're a home run culture. I think we like to watch balls flying out of the ballpark.
I think it's simple. It's just depending on the predominance of talent out there and what their skill set is. I think when I go to my kids' Little League game, a lot of them are small ball. You got to run here. You got to run there.
It's you can appreciate it as a baseball fan, the hardcore baseball fan, in terms of drawing a broader appeal to the game. You know, the game was never more popular. The game had gained great popularity coming back after the work stoppage in the 90s as a result of the steroids era, because balls were flying out of the park left and right. It was the result of skullduggery and fakery. But it can't be disregarded that because of that home run binge, there was a growing popularity in baseball. So if you're speaking to the general public, they prefer the home run. But in terms of baseball purists, there's a lot to admire about how the Royals went about their business.
Was there a better game than Game 1 of that series?
Except for the loss, absolutely not. That was a fantastic game. It really was.
At the end of that game, I was more thrilled from having watched it than being bummed out that they lost, that the Mets lost.
Yeah. I was just tired. It's past my bedtime.
I was tired.
Steve, thanks for the call.
Thanks a lot, guys. Have a great day.
Yeah, you too. Number to call is 1-800-348-2551.
I'm still tired, man. That's serious.
I got to admit, it's been a relief the past couple of days not having to stay up till 1 o'clock in the morning watching baseball.
The first day after the series, I sat and watched Peppa Pig with my 5-year-old. And I said, this is a lot more relaxing.
I just got to throw this in. I got back at 2:30 in the morning from my kid's college game, and I'm like, this sports stuff has just got to end. I'm just like, I am tired. I want to go to bed at like 6 o'clock tonight.
Well, you'll only be up till 1 a.m. working.
I got to be up till 1 a.m. working.
All right, here's one. An email came in from George in Chesapeake, Virginia. Wow. I would like to know what you guys, you executive and non-executive sports editors, think about the upcoming basketball season. George loves Syracuse.
Syracuse and their very, 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 very short bench. Let's ask a Syracuse person. What do you think of Syracuse?
I always like Syracuse when they're going into a season sort of sailing under the radar a little bit. I think the expectations have been a little bit tempered this year, and I guess I sort of like that about them. I mean, listen, they got to be better offensively than they were last year. They were just a disaster to watch last year. So, I mean, it sounds simple, but if they can score more points, they'll be a better team this year.
How do you think they'll be impacted by what surrounded the offseason?
You know, that's a good question. It's not going to come up early in the season until he actually starts serving the suspension, obviously. But, you know, the thing is, and Boeheim pointed this out the other day, he can't even really be around the team during that suspension. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you've got established assistant coaches there who've been there a long time. I mean, Mike Hopkins is going to run the same, you know, they're going to run the same stuff. Yeah. I don't, nobody's going to be looking at strange faces in there while Jim Boeheim's not there. But I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how that plays
okay,
out.
Okay, so the suspension now, it affects Boeheim, but does it affect the program? Are they not eligible for postseason?
They are eligible for postseason.
They are.
They were not last year.
Okay. And also you have Siena and UAlbany starting up against some huge teams. Obviously, L's going up quickly in the standings. One plays Duke, one plays Kentucky next week.
Yeah, but the L's mean nothing. I mean, this type of scheduling I've always been a big fan of because Siena's opening up with the national finalists. They're playing Duke and Wisconsin.
In back-to-back weeks? Yikes.
Friday, Sunday.
Wow.
Friday, Sunday. And UAlbany is opening up against Kentucky.
Right.
So this is a certainly not a soft schedule. But the bottom line is neither one of these teams are getting at-large bids. So it doesn't really matter about their overall record. The matter is their level of competition. These teams will be better for having played this level of
competition.
So in
other words, their mettle will be tested when they're playing the play-in tourneys, the MAC or whatever else, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, they have to win their conference tourneys to get in the NCAAs.
Yeah.
So they're just going to be better teams from having these experiences. Plus, it's also good on the recruiting trail. Hey, you come to Siena, you come to UAlbany.
Yeah, we lost to Kentucky by 80 points.
No,
yeah, that's great.
No, you got to play at Cameron Indoor Stadium. You come here, you might be able to play at Rupp Arena.
Okay. Well, let's not forget there's paydays tied to a lot of these games,
yeah,
too.
It's also cash.
Okay, all right. Let's go to Luke in Lenox. Luke, you're on. Thanks for waiting. Hello, Luke. I think Luke is probably... Yeah.
Hi, I'm here.
Oh, you are?
It's Luke.
Go ahead, Luke.
Great. I wanted to go back to the NFL, specifically to the NFC North, and ask why the Lions are so bad after having such a good year, going 11-5 last year and looking like things were on the up. And without serious changes, they're now pretty handily the worst team in the NFL.
Boy.
And they just fired their GM and president today.
Yeah, they just made serious changes this afternoon.
Yeah.
Well,
but I guess I'm wondering, yes, they made those changes, but what do you think those changes are going to make a difference, or do you think it has to do with the players, or I'm just curious your thoughts.
The quarterback's having a lousy year.
Both their lines are atrocious. Their offensive line is terrible. Losing Sue and Farrelly obviously impacted their defensive line. All three levels of their defense is terrible, frankly. Megatron is not Megatron this year. He has not played particularly well. Is there an aspect of the Lions that are as good?
I was going to say, quarterback's a free agent at the end of the year, isn't he?
He's an interesting question about whether to move on from him, because we always look to the quarterback. He gets too much of the credit, gets too much of the blame. But really, it starts with an offensive line, especially with a pocket passer. And if he's not getting the protection he needs and he tries to do too much, then that's going to impact him. But there's also the fact when he's sailing balls and throwing picks, a lot of that does fall on the quarterback.
Yeah.
So the question is,
right.
Let's throw the question back at you. Do you think they should move on from Stafford?
Well, it's a good question, because he was throwing wobbly picks last year when they were 11-5. And they managed to get through it because he was throwing 400 yards and four or five touchdowns a game. But that doesn't seem to be the case this year, and I wonder if it's the offensive line or not. I guess I'm willing to think, as a Lions fan, that maybe we should stick with Stafford.
The question is, and again, as two Jet fans, we've been through this
and
before.
A Giants fan,
and
by the way.
And a Giants fan.
So I'm staying above the fray.
Yes, because... Yes, because you have two titles and shut up.
Yeah.
People say, go out, we need a new quarterback. And you can't go to the quarterback tree and just pluck one out. You have to have a viable alternative. This upcoming draft is not a good draft for quarterbacks, for example.
Colin Kaepernick might be available. A little trade. Megatron for Colin Kaepernick?
Yeah, that's a great trade, Ray. Go back to staying above the fray.
All right, fine.
So what are your options that are out there? What is available, what would be out there that's better than Stafford?
There are a lot of teams who would love to have Stafford, the Jets being one of them,
I think. Yeah, we'll give you Geno Smith. Deal? No.
Well, right? I mean, the Lions could end up with the first draft pick at this point.
And I could see Stafford going to another team and winning championships.
Possibly. I mean, there have been many quarterbacks who have been pulled off the scrap heap that have gone on to win titles. Quarterbacks that have gone on to win Super Bowls. Kurt Warner.
Like Drew Brees.
Jim Plunkett. I mean, there's been all throughout NFL history. Did I go way back?
You pulled the Plunkett deep. There.
That's why he's executive.
Yeah. That's right.
Well, good luck, Luke. Listen, I feel your pain, and I know the Jets fans are right there with you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Have a good day.
Yeah, you too. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Dan in Saratoga Springs. Dan.
How do you do, guys? It's good that you're starting to warm up the Potbelly stove for a long, cold winter.
Oh, yeah, we're ready.
Wanted to bring up that hypothetical. If there should ever be a series again, I mean New York, because other places are getting Subway stove. why in 2000 did it cross the people's mind when the Yankees wanted Mets Stadium, that they didn't form lines like in hockey and go by and shake each other's hands? Boy, that would have been poetic. So I'll listen then to see if you can wax on that.
All right.
Why didn't they shake hands? Because they were probably afraid that Roger Clemens would
throw a bat
at him.
Yeah.
Maybe.
You're still not bitter about that, are you?
I'm not bitter at all. Roger Clemens assaulting Mike Piazza. Not at all.
Roger would be shaking with his right hand. He'd be wielding that bat with his left
hand.
Well, I mean, that's a good point, though. I mean, when you win, your team tends to celebrate immediately, and that's just the way it is. And it goes back a long way in World Series. I don't recall them. I know in Little League you line up at the end of the game and shake hands, but I don't recall that in the majors all that often.
You know, obviously, that happens at the end of a hockey series.
Sure.
In the NHL. I think it's one of the great traditions in sports. At the end of you get a great 7-game NHL playoff series, and then you see the teams line up and shake hands at the end. I love that about hockey.
It's done informally in football, but not in championships.
Yeah.
It's done not in basketball. It's done formally in basketball in college level, but not for championships.
Right. What about yachting?
In yachting, it's often done after the champagne ceremony.
Ah.
Which is done.
Well, we're almost done here. All right, so let me ask you guys a couple of quick questions. One, Knicks, do they have a winning record at the end this spring?
Oh, hell no.
No? I think you're wrong.
I don't know. Mark's a big fan of their number one draft pick, so I'm surprised to hear him say
Porzingis makes the Knicks. Knicks are going to be eminently watchable. Porzingis is the real deal.
The Knicks will be over 500. That's the proper answer. They will be over 500 at the end of the season.
Over 500 what?
Over a 500 winning percentage. They will have a winning record at the end of the season.
Put down the scotch. You're out of your mind.
I'm not. I'm drinking coffee.
No, that's not going to happen. But Porzingis is an absolute real deal reason to watch. The Knicks are never going to be a contender until the post-Carmelo years. He's just not a winner. But you're going to have every reason to tune in to watch this kid develop. If you haven't seen him yet, he's a big man with small man skills. He has a three-point range. His shot has not been falling yet, but he's already has, you can see it on YouTube, two posterizing dunks already. He has handle. He is, for people who are freaking out on draft night over his selection, they're not freaking out now. His only issue right now is foul trouble. He'll outgrow that.
Pete, you got to agree with me. The Knicks will have a winning record at the end of the year, right?
If I had to put money on it, I'd go under 500.
Oh, come on. All right, now you'll never be an executive editor. Never. All right, guys. Well, thanks a lot. All right, let's forecast now. Yankees next season. Give me your prediction. A winning record or a losing record? Yankees.
Winning record.
Winning record. Absolutely.
Red Sox.
Good one.
Losing record.
I'm going to go winning record.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, the Red Sox, they're a team that kind of bounces back and forth. I'm going to say winning record. Actually, I'm going to say they're going to contend.
All right, how about Mets?
Winning record.
Winning record, contend for a wild card. I think the Nationals will be back.
The Nationals have we're almost out of time here, but I beg to differ. The Nationals have a tremendous turnover heading their way this season.
Yeah, but they'll come back. But they are also a very structurally flawed team with psychological problems.
And both the Mets and the Nationals will benefit from playing two really bad teams in the Marlins and the Braves.
Yes, they will be terrible. The Braves are gearing up for a new stadium in 2017, so they're just going to be terrible for one more year.
All right, we got 30 seconds left. Let's give Ken and Ticonderoga the last word here. Ken.
Take heart, guys. It's only 100 days till pitchers and catchers report.
I love it, man. Thank you. Ken, thanks for the call. Perfect way to end the show. We appreciate it. Thanks to everybody who called in. That was fun. You guys were good today. Yeah?
As opposed to most days.
Most days were terrible.
I mean, well, the curling show we did not too long ago wasn't too good.
That was terrible. That was terrible.
Yeah, and you know, there were no figure skating questions. When they pop up, we bring Jess in. She's the expert on that.
I was kind of disappointed about that. But I thought he brought executive-level quality to the show.
Okay. I think that was a shot, Pete. So we're going to leave it there. Mark McGuire of the Daily Gazette, Pete Iorizzo of the Times Union. The websites, timesunion.com, right?
That's correct.
And they'll find your fine work there.
Yes, they will.
And then the Gazette, which is behind a paywall most of the time, right?
Yeah, but I make it free.
Okay, so you're...
DailyGazette.com.
Thanks a lot, gentlemen. Support comes from Haydenville Woodworking and Design, a group of artisans designing and building renovations, additions, new homes, custom cabinets, and furniture for over 30 years. HaydenvilleWD.com for virtual portfolio. Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Over 300 flavors of handcrafted dairy and dairy-free ice creams, cakes, hot fudge, and more. Harold's.com. And Union College Concert Series, presenting pianist Yefim Bromfman, performing works of Prokofiev and Schumann en route to his recital at Carnegie Hall Wednesday, November 11th, 7:30 p.m., unioncollegeconcerts.org. Thanks again to Mark McGuire, Pete Iorizzo, Zach the Engineer. Thanks to our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. Your calls were answered by Deb Malik. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, yep, it's Food Friday. Stay tuned now for news.